Let us turn our attention to Africa Analysis now. This is an opportunity for us every couple of days that we get to check in with JJ Cornish. It is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, where we look at what's happening around the African continent. Here is none other than JJ Cornish. Good morning, sir. Are you back in South Africa?
Bonjour to you. I most certainly am. In fact, I'm in the Lowveld. I'm on the verge of the Kruger Park at a camp here.
Very nice.
Daughter from Sweden is out with me, so we're showing them the bush. Well, showing my grandchildren.
Very good.
We had a baboon walk into our house last night and attempt to get our food, which rather traumatized everybody. But
well, that's one of the things that could happen on this lovely continent of ours. Mm-hmm. We still live in proximity to the wild world. But you got back from Libya, where you were just a short Algeria, where you were a short while ago, JJ. Apparently, you had a very interesting return flight from Algeria.
Well, it took forever. You know, they flew me over there to cover a summit meeting, business class and the direct flight, and then they cancelled the return flight. Sod's law, I suppose you call it. And that's not – I don't think I'm speaking Arabic when I say that. But anyway, they flew me via Istanbul. I mean, it's not a scary airport at all. I mean, it's an impressive airport.
Very good.
Turkish Airlines were very good too, so it was. But it did take forever, 10-hour layover, and that can really drag out a little, can't it?
Mm-hmm. It can. So JJ, let's look at what's going on in other news around the continent. First of all, Somalia, which we know is a haven for and a very big area of concern when it comes to piracy. It continues to be. We know that the Houthis have been a massive problem in the Yemeni area on the south of the Arabian Peninsula, which obviously is across the Gulf from Somalia. But Somalia has been a hotbed of this kind of thing for the longest time. And now apparently an Indian Navy ship has had to come in and rescue a ship that was pirated by the Somalians.
Couple of elements there. Of course, Somalia was the place for piracy. It did move across to the Gulf around Nigeria at one point, and it became even worse there. But so bad was Somalia that the NATO actually put naval forces in there to stop it. And there's been nothing really serious happening there since 2017. But then they took a MV Ruin, a motor ship the other day. In fact, back in December, and they've been holding that with its crew of 35, and the Indian Navy has stepped in and rescued the crew, of 17, 35 pirates who surrendered and have been held. Hmm. Now, a Bangladeshi vessel, MV Abdullah, it was held last week. And these same Indians and some Europeans are saying, we'll rescue them for you. There's a crew there of 34. And the Bangladeshis are saying, no, you don't even think about it. We put the safety of the crew at priority here, and you're not going to do that. So we wait to see. But what's this going to mean? That does mean that the naval forces have been redeployed around the Red Sea to hit at the Houthis, and apparently some Americans took a huge number of armaments and missiles and things. They captured them yesterday, so they're making some progress there. But those Houthi rebels out of Yemen, they haven't managed to beat them into submission yet. So if you are planning to take the catamaran, and I'll lend it to you this weekend, don't go up that way to the Horn. Head the other way. Even what the hell? Go to the Antarctic, man.
All right, so not the best place to go for a holiday at the moment. Now, what about, we constantly have these hostile activities happening, governments overthrown and all kinds of other things. And the AU has been kind of lackluster in being able to stop military coups, presidents being displaced, armed conflicts where one person is put in top and the other is thrown out. Why is the AU taking a tougher stance now, and can we believe them?
Because for the very reason that this has become the sort of coup center of the world. They've had all the Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, Guinea, all of that in recent years. And the AU has done what it can, what any sort of multilateral organization can do. It red cards any unconstitutional change of government. And that member of the AU cannot participate in or cannot vote. And but that has upset many. For example, the regional group, ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, when the coups happened in Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, they said, that's enough. We will step in militarily and make you restore constitutionality. And then somebody said, yeah, great idea. Have you thought who's actually going to pay for that? And they said, oh, look, we'll come back to you on this one. And then those three countries decided, well, if you're going to kick us out or sanction us, we're actually leaving. So, you know, there's an absolute mishmash, a real mess in that part of the world. But the AU has now suddenly said, we're not putting up with military takeovers. Peace, democracy is absolutely essential for development. Now, as we look at the countries I've just mentioned, Niger has ended its military relationship with the U.S. Niger was a friendly country to the West, and now it's changed around. Burkina Faso, according to analysts, has become a sort of a test case or a laboratory for the Russians. And the Russians already have Wagner mercenaries in the Central African Republic, and they're starting to move them into Burkina Faso. So that's not a country that's coming round. But in every case, there's been the secessionists and there's been the jihadis, and they've not been able to control them. And certainly the French, when they try to run that part or to control that part of the world better, they brought the countries together to form an alliance. But they went over the top in the sense that they believed any problem involving jihadis had to be sorted out militarily. And you can't do that. Essentially, many of these young men become jihadis because there's just no work. There's nothing else to do to sustain them. So, it's very interesting. Interesting that the Niger thing happened shortly after a visit by the Assistant Secretary of State Molly Rhee and General Michael Langley, who is the head of the AFRICOM, African Command in Africa, the U.S. Africa Command in Africa. And they visited there thinking they could try to move Niger back into Guyana. And Niger said, well, I have nothing more to do with you, United States. So yeah. It really is a very, very troublesome, certainly for the West at this time.
You know, listening to JJ now, I actually start questioning the utility of the AU. Like, they don't have teeth. They can't actually put into action a lot of things that whatever resolutions they might come up with. But JJ, there's a very interesting story that we heard about, like WhatsApp and Malawi women being somehow the Malawi woman being saved using WhatsApp. That sounds so strange to me.
That was very interesting. But you know, you're starting with me. And I know, I see Gareth wouldn't even do it. I mean, hitting at my support for multilateral organizations. And since I was a correspondent to the United Nations, I believe very firmly in them. Yeah. I know that they're imperfect. I know that they lack teeth in many ways. But, you know, the essential argument there is it is better to have them than not to have them. Not to have the African Union. What would you have in Africa? I certainly think there's many, many, many improvements. But the African Union, as compared to the Organization of African Unity, that club of presidents that never would criticize one another, it has improved. Lot of room for improvements. But to get back to Malawi, what an interesting story. This is in Oman. In this particular case, something like 20 of them were rescued. But this particular woman ran a small business in Malawi, and they came to her and said, you can do a whole lot better. If you become a taxi driver in Oman, you can do a whole lot better. Why don't you come over? And of course, she grasped the opportunity. But she was made to become a maid, and she was working sometimes for 20 hours a day. And then her boss came along and started raping her. And I mean, she finally had no way out of this, and she just was absolutely desperate. She went on to Facebook, and believe it or not, a compatriot, a fellow Malawian living in New Hampshire in the United States, got onto the BBC, and the BBC in turn, they've got some muscle in this regard, and they came out and they've effectively rescued her and about 20 others. But what we're waiting for, Jack, what we're waiting for is some kind of retribution for the Omanis. I'd like to see prosecutions there, because we're hearing stories of this, and there are many countries, I do believe it's Ethiopia is one of them, saying you can't go and work in those countries. You're not allowed to work in the Arab countries. Say to their citizens, it's just too hazardous, and we can't rescue you all the time.
JJ, I mean, it's an interesting thing, and we're running out of time here, but it's worth remarking on the fact that there is more slavery going on today in the world than there was in the 1800s. And much of that is happening in the intersection of the Arab world and the African world. And it's something that's very uncomfortable for all these multilateral organizations to deal with, because it requires arguments over sovereignty, over what happens to citizens of other countries once they are found in countries that are not the ones that they come from. And we know that there are parts of the world like Oman where, you know, you could basically be put into slavery, sex slavery, or worse things, and if there is something worse, but otherwise the kind of forced indentured labor that we would have expected to be a part of our history. How much of this have you encountered, especially because you've just been to North Africa?
Well, I mean, I haven't seen the awful side of it, because you wouldn't be. These are people locked away. But I know when I went to Kuwait and I went out for a walk, and please excuse me, I went out for a walk, and there were just thousands of people around. It was a Sunday evening. And these were thousands of, again, Ethiopians and people from the continent, some from Sri Lanka, India, and so on, all working there, doing all the jobs. Now, of course, if you live in Kuwait, you don't do any work at all. As you attain adulthood, they give you a home. If you get married, you get further rewarded. For every child, you get rewarded. And then you do the labor that you don't mind doing, because people do the menial work. But there are thousands upon thousands of them doing that. And, I went to speak to some of them, and they'd just been to church. And the only recreation they get all week is for an hour or two after church on Sunday night, that they can meet with other people. But for the rest, they said the situation is very grim. And we know with the World Cup, Football World Cup, the people building the stadia were actually worked in the heat, and many of them actually died. So there's an indifference, not to say absolute outright cruelty, towards workers in the Arab world.
Yeah, it's definitely not a simple and binary system, and we have lots to work out still about the way that our continent is interacting with the rest of the world. And I think Africa is still, we've got some way to go to assert ourselves in some respects, even if it is, and I know Jack he's trying to bait me into having an argument with you about multilateralism, but we won't do that today. We will not. I resolutely refuse to get into an argument with JJ Cornish. Mm-hmm. Enjoy your time. Yes?
Thank you. I can't see Jack's forearms, but I'd challenge him to an arm wrestle. But, I don't know. Does he have tattoos, or does he have spelling errors on his tattoos?
No, not at all. I'm just, well, you know what? As an olive branch, JJ, just so you know, I'm small enough to fit in your carry-on. So the next time you travel somewhere and you want to educate me even further, just give me a shot.
Just be careful they don't think that he's trafficking you as a slave. That's all you want. JJ Cornish, enjoy your time with your daughter and grandchildren, and we will speak to you in another 2 weeks' time on Africanalysis. Thank you very much.
Looking forward to it. All the best.
Thank you, JJ.